Dr. Harold Shank serves as the national spokesperson for Network 127. He has served in this role on behalf of Christian Childcare since 1996. As a national spokesman, Dr. Shank speaks, writes articles and books promoting Christian childcare. His latest book takes up the biblical perspective of children. Listen and Make Room, Joining God and Welcoming Children, has 44 short chapters on children. The book takes up the mission to children, listening to children, listening to what God says about children, making room and hope. His work is promote Christian childcare, raises awareness among churches and Christians nationwide. Dr. Shank has preached the gospel for over 50 years. He has served as president of Ohio Valley University in Vienna, West Virginia, professor of Harding School of Theology and Oklahoma Christian University, and for 32 years has associated with the Highland Street Church of Christ in Memphis, Tennessee. Dr. Shank is a 1972 graduate of Oklahoma Christian with a BA in Bible. He received his MA and MAR from Harding University Graduate School of Religion. His PhD is in theology. Marquette University. Harold and his wife, Sally, are both members of the Memorial Road Church of Christ in Edmond, Oklahoma, where Harold serves as an elder. They have two adult sons and four grandchildren. I think if you've been to this conference before, it's just a treasure to listen to them or listen to him speak and his powerful words. So we want to welcome you to come speak to us.
Well, thank you and good evening. It's been a great evening so far. You know, eating has a long biblical tradition. It started off in the Garden of Eden, didn't start off very well there with eating, but quickly moved to Abraham and Sarah, inviting God and two angels to the first fast food restaurant in Genesis 18, and ended up talking about righteousness and justice for children. And goes on to Passover and the Lord's Supper and church potlucks, and on it goes. Eating has a long biblical tradition. And so it's good for us to be eating together. And I think that eating together reminds us that we're not in this alone. We don't live alone, and we don't work alone, and we're not the only ones about this task of caring for at-risk children and families. And so, Network 127 is a little bit like a church that meets once a year, except the potluck goes on for 4 days. And so Sally and I are just really delighted to always share table with you and to enjoy this conference together, and this is another one that we are enjoying that way. And speaking of eating together, some time ago Sally and I were at a banquet not unlike this one, and our hosts were Randy and Kim. And they introduced us to the people at the table. We didn't really know any of them, but one was Terry, a young woman. I took her to be maybe a late teenager, early 20s. And as we sat down and started to eat, several at the table tried to engage Terry in conversation, and her answers were either very short or nothing at all. And I noticed she didn't make eye contact with any of us. And I thought that was a bit strange. And so later I talked to Randy and Kim about that. And they said, well, it's a horrible story, a miserable story. About a month ago, Terry was assaulted by a group of men. And they did unspeakable things to her. Left her bleeding and unprotected and wounded. And then what happened next was almost worse than what happened at first, because she went home seeking some comfort and protection, and her family, when they heard her story turned against her and said, leave, you have, what has happened to you has shamed our family. We don't want you here now. And so expecting comfort, she got rejection. Expecting healing, she got even more hurt. And when I heard Terry's story, I thought, that's misery. That's misery. Hardy Brown was born 1924 in Childress, Texas. It was during Prohibition in America. And Hardy's father was a bootlegger. And one day when Hardy was 4 years old, two men came to their house, and Hardy was standing beside his father, and the three men, all bootleggers, were talking. The conversation turned rather negative, and the two visitors pulled out pistols and at point-blank range fired at his father, nearly cutting his father in two, and Hardy's clothes were splattered with his father's blood. Hardy's mother was beside herself. She was filled with agony and anger and dysfunction. She couldn't take care of Hardy, and so Hardy was shipped off to the Fort Worth orphanage. And when he arrived at the orphanage, he still had the blood-splattered clothes. And when I heard Hardy Brown's true story, I thought, that's misery. Rusty Russell was an American soldier, fought in World War I, was a medic, fought the trench warfare in France, and one day the Germans attacked them with mustard gas, and Rusty Russell was temporarily blinded, then wounded, was not able to do any of his work as a medic, and was shipped off to a hospital in Paris where he regained his sight, was healed of his wounds. And then just as Rusty Russell was about to be released from the hospital, word came that his brother had been killed in the same war. And when I heard that story, I thought, that's misery. Well, we all know about misery. And perhaps you've had some miserable experiences that are worse than those three. Or perhaps your experiences only pale in comparison to those three. And we all work with people, young people and families that are going through miserable experiences. And we sometimes wonder how we can carry on and how we go on. There's a story about misery in 2 Chronicles 28. It's the 8th century B.C. Ahaz is king of Judah. He's not a good man, not a good king. He's a wicked king. In fact, the chapter opens and closes with 18 descriptions of the sins of Ahaz. He rules for 16 years, and they're not 16 good years. And so God sends the king of Syria with an army down to Judea. And the Syrians and the Judeans engage in battle, and the Judeans lose the battle, and a number of Judean soldiers are carried off into captivity up to Damascus. And then North Israel under Pekah, and North Israel and Judah, related distant cousins, you might say. And so Pekah invades Judah under Ahaz, and there's another battle that takes place, and the North Israelites are able to kill 120,000 Judean soldiers. Now, all war is horrible, but for one battle, to have a casualty list that high, it's got to rank it among the top battles. And then after the battle's over, the North Israelites just go through the countryside looting and collecting booty, and they also capture 200,000 prisoners of war. And the North Israelite army escorts their 200,000 prisoners of war and all the booty, all the stuff that they've collected, the 40 miles from Judea back to Samaria. And so we have a scene at the gates of Samaria where we have the North Israelite army bringing their donkeys filled with spoil and plunder, and 200,000 prisoners of war. And these are not men. These are women and children. These are the widows of the 120,000 soldiers, and these are the orphans of the 120,000 Judean soldiers that have been killed. So we have the North Israelite army. We have the 200,000 prisoners of war. We have the donkeys filled with bounty, and the people of Samaria come out to the gate to witness what's going on. And when I read that story, I thought, that's misery. That's misery. But then there are four magical moments of mercy. And the first one is, in the midst of all this, the 200,000 prisoners of war, all the booty, the North Israelite soldiers and the people of Samaria that have come out to the gate of the city, they're all standing there. And suddenly in the midst of them is Oded, the prophet of God. And Oded says, what you're doing is wrong. You intend to make slaves of these 200,000 prisoners of war, and it's not right. It's wrong. You shouldn't do it. And the rage of your anger has reached the very heavens. Send these people home. It was a magical moment of mercy. And then the second magical moment of mercy is that the North Israelite soldiers who have just won the battle, killed 120,000 Judeans, brought 200,000 prisoners of war 40 miles north to Samaria, they just leave. They just leave. They just leave the prisoners of war. They leave the donkeys. They leave the booty. And they leave their fellow citizens who have come out of the city of Samaria. They just leave. And then in a third magical moment of mercy, the people who live in Samaria, who now have responsibility for 200,000 prisoners of war and for all this booty, they organize and they decide to serve these people. And so they clothe the prisoners of war that are naked, and they give food and drink to the prisoners of war, these women and children who don't have any food. And they bring out oil and medical apparatus, and they take care of those who were wounded. And it's a magical moment of mercy when the people of Samaria serve the prisoners of war and do not enslave them and do not take the booty for their own enrichment. And then there's a fourth moment, a magical moment of mercy. And they decide to take the prisoners of war home. And so they begin the journey 30 miles downhill to the Judean city of Jericho. And they load the old and the infirm and the weak and the feeble onto donkeys, their own donkeys. And you can imagine the people of Samaria taking 200,000 prisoners of war down to Jericho. Magical moment of mercy. Well, what happens there in 2 Chronicles 28 really illustrates some major biblical thoughts. One is Leviticus 19:18, where Moses says, love your neighbor as yourself. And so the Israelites and the Judeans, the victors and the losers, they were neighbors. And we see them loving their neighbors as themselves. Or Matthew chapter 7, verse 12, Jesus, and he says, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And so the Samaritans treat the Judeans as they hope the Judeans might treat them. Or Luke chapter 6, verse 36, be merciful as your Father in heaven is merciful. Magical moments of mercy. And I think as we reflect on this text in 2 Chronicles 28, there are a couple of things that we can take away that may be helpful. One is that mercy starts with God. And so God looks down on the scene in Palestine. He sees the battle between North Israel and Judea and sees 120,000 corpses on the ground, sees the plunder that's going on in Judea, sees the 200,000 prisoners of war being brought back home to be slaves, and he sends a prophet. at exactly the right moment, saying exactly the right words, prompting magical moments of mercy. Mercy starts with God. And then I think we also see in this story that mercy always changes the relationship with the people that were around. And so these people were enemies. They had just won a battle. They just defeated, the North Israelites had just defeated the Judeans. But now suddenly they're treating each other as neighbors and friends. It's no longer us and them, the rich and the poor, the citizen and the immigrant. But it's the fences are being broken down and turned into bridges, and the lawsuits turned into friendships, and the enemies are becoming neighbors. And so mercy has a way of changing our relationship with other people. And then a striking point out of the story is mercy works. Mercy works. I mean, this was a miserable mess. 120,000 dead Judeans, plundered country, 200,000 women and children who are prisoners of war about to become slaves. How do you make anything out of that miserable situation? Well, mercy did, and mercy worked, changed the situation. And mercy continues to work. And so there's Rusty Russell, the World War I soldier who was blinded with mustard gas, and Hardy Brown, the four-year-old who saw his father killed right in front of him. Well, Rusty Russell came back from World War I and became a high school football coach in Texas. Coached a number of different schools and finally ended up coaching at the Fort Worth Orphanage High School. And one of the boys he started coaching was 14-year-old Hardy Brown, who had seen his father cut into it right in front of him. Hardy Brown didn't know a thing about football, but Coach Russell showed mercy to this young man and changed his life. And with Coach Russell calling the shots and Hardy Brown at quarterback, they won the 1938 Texas football championship. And the whole story is told in a 2021 movie called 12 Mighty Orphans. And Hardy Brown went on to play NFL for Denver, Washington, and San Francisco. Magical moments of mercy. And then there was Terry, who was at our table at the banquet, and Randy and Kim had told us about her, but what they didn't tell us till a little bit later was that when they heard about what happened to Terry, they said, well, you know, our kids are all gone to college. We've got these two extra bedrooms. Why don't we invite Terry to move into our house? And it was a magical moment of mercy because Terry was living with them. And Randy's on the board of one of our Network 127 agencies. Magical moments of mercy. Well, the story in 2 Chronicles 28, I hope it inspires you, and I hope it informs you. So as you encounter that baby that needs to be put up for adoption, and it's a miserable situation, it calls for a magical moment of mercy, which changes everything. And when those children come into foster care and the situation at home is dysfunctional and it's just misery, need a magical moment of mercy to make that situation go another direction. Or when that single mother needs a place to stay and some help with the children that she's brought into the world, there needs to be a magical moment of mercy, and it makes a difference. It works. Or when those children or teenagers are aging out of foster care and about to be homeless or in prison, they need a magical moment of mercy. Get them into that apartment that you have. Well, not only are we inspired by this story in 2 Chronicles 28, but there was one other person that was inspired by this story. And one day he was having a theological discussion with this lawyer, and the lawyer said, well, who exactly is my neighbor? And so this man recalled, apparently, the story in 2 Chronicles 28, and he told a little different version of it. It was a man that had been robbed in a ditch between Jerusalem and Jericho. And a couple of people went by and walked by on the other side, and then a Samaritan came and treated his wounds and put him on a donkey and took him to Jericho. And Jesus said to the lawyer, "Now, who was the neighbor to the man that was hurt?" And the lawyer said, "The one that showed him mercy." And Jesus said, "Go and do likewise." Magical moments of mercy.